Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Retrotainment. This week I am joined by Greg Flanagan with a movie of his choosing. It's not as old as the other films we've watched, but it's one of his favourites. So I'll let you introduce it, Greg, if people don't know from the image behind me.
The image behind you is a 1999 classic with Denzel. It's The Hurricane.
Yeah, released in September of 1999, so just after the summer.
I think it was released...
That's in the States, I think.
Yeah, I think it got released here in the January or something.
Yeah, we always get things a bit late. It's real annoying. Sometimes you just want to watch it. And
It's not too bad now, really.
Now it's not as bad, but back then, yeah, you could be waiting 6 months to see something.
But this one, I think, didn't really even get a big cinema release in the States, even because of the precipice of the movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it would, because it was still a very, very hot topic at that sort of time. I know it's a couple of years since.
But it was only 15 years, was it? 14 years from when he got released to when this got released in the cinema.
Yeah, and it was still a really big hot topic at the time, you know.
Yeah, there was a pending trial still going to try and get him back into jail.
Yeah, they did. They went for ages trying to get him back into jail. I don't know why they were so convinced it was him. I've kind of read up on it. I'd read up on this years before I'd ever watched this film. I didn't even know there was a film, to be honest. But I'd read up on the whole case and stuff years ago.
And I
never really understood why they were so convinced. Like, they spent so much money. The only thing I can think of is that they put so much effort into framing him that if they admitted that he wasn't the one to do it and they framed him, that they'd all go to prison for...
It certainly went across that way, didn't it? Obviously, some of the names were changed in the movie, but the officer, was called Della Pesca in the movie.
Yeah.
Was the same officer in real life that put him away 3 different times.
Oh, yeah. The film stays true to quite a bit of the story from what I've read in the past.
A lot of the names, the names of the people that were killed are different.
That's probably just for legal reasons, I'd say, though, more than anything.
John Artis was the guy who was driving's real name.
Yeah, so I think they kept the names of anyone that, you know, they could use legally and probably asked, could they use?
Yeah.
But obviously the deceased, you can't, like, you're not going to go and ask them, and
yeah,
you don't want to drag their families through this whole thing again. But I always have a look at the ratings for these films just before I actually watch them myself. It never actually impacts what I think of a film. I know for some people it's a big thing. You know, if they're told a film is badly rated, they won't watch it. That's never been a thing for me. Yeah. If I enjoy a film, I enjoy it, so it doesn't bother me at all.
I watched The Wrong Turn Collection, so
yeah, it always yeah, but it's always just something I like to see how things went. So on Rotten Tomatoes, out of 113 critics rating this, it got an 83. So that is pretty high. Good. Yeah, and from an audience point of view, it got an 87. So yeah, both relatively close, you know.
Both fair.
Both high in the 80s. And I think it does deserve that. Critics always have a different way of viewing a film. So they'll knock points off their rating for stuff that me and you and normal people that just watch films to enjoy them aren't going to knock points off for. So they might have knocked points off this for, you know, it not staying true to the actual story. Like when him and John Artis get stopped in the car, it's just the two of them in the car, which isn't what actually happened.
They also they also drove past the pub twice in 45 minutes after the shooting, but...
Yeah, so like originally when they were stopped, he's lying down in the back of the car. John Artis is driving and there's one other guy up in the front seat with John.
Yeah,
that's when they get stopped the first away. Time. Yeah, that gets stopped. They get stopped the first time, get told to go on, then 45 minutes later, drive by again, and it is just the two of them. But obviously the film just depicts it as just the two of them the entire time.
It doesn't even show them going by. It just shows them in the car. Somewhere.
Yeah, and but like critics would knock things off for that, which I wouldn't, because you know it's a Hollywood film. It's not going to be entirely like, it's not a documentary. You know, it's there to be entertaining. Yeah, it's meant to be entertaining. So you also kind of have to fudge it a bit.
The fight where he fights for the title, where it looks like he won, he got absolutely smashed around for 10 rounds in that fight.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, I haven't gone back and watched it, but yeah.
I don't even think you can find it. There's a lot of them that you can't find, but...
they're like, from quite a long time ago.
Even from reading his book, actually, I said to you, I'd give you an end of it.
Yeah.
The book that this film's based on, the 16th round.
Yeah.
He even says that he thinks he lost the fight, so...
Yeah, well, see, that's the sort of thing. You're not going to put that into the film because it doesn't, you know...
Yeah.
This film is obviously built on the way the case was built. The case is built on, you know, a racial prejudice. So they wanted to hype that up in the film as well. So they had the white guy win, even though he gets destroyed in the fight, which,
he's
as you say,
bits.
Yeah. But I also checked the rating on IMDb, 7.6 out of 10. So you're talking still in and around, you know,
high 70s.
Yeah, high 70s to mid to high 80s.
Probably fair.
Yeah. Now, as you were saying, this didn't really do, it wasn't a big film in terms of box office. So I looked that up, 74 million box office, which isn't, you know, it's not nothing, but it's not particularly high either.
Yeah. Well,
especially considering 1999, like some of these other films were, you know, up in the hundreds. And
yeah, I wouldn't think Denzel was on a major wages at that stage either.
No, I think this is probably one of the... I think earlier this led big films for Denzel. I think this was 99, so he would have had...
I think he'd done Malcolm X just before.
He would have had Malcolm X in 92, I think, in and around 1992 was Malcolm X. But yeah, I don't he hadn't become the star that he is now, that people know him to be at that point.
He's a superstar now.
Actually, it doesn't really look like Denzel in this film, though, does he, either? Like,
it's funny when you actually mention Malcolm X there. So the director of this, Norman Jewson, was supposed to direct Malcolm X with Denzel after he'd been cast. And Spike Lee kicked up murder because obviously Norman Jewson is white.
And he wanted a black director.
Yeah, so the black director done Malcolm X. Now, Malcolm X is a good movie. It's a very good movie. So when this one came around, he couldn't be talked out of it, and he picked Denzel up again.
Yeah, I think there was maybe like 1992, maybe there was just a bit of a feeling that if you had a white guy directing it, then it wouldn't show the true struggles. But this film did, it did it well as well. It showed.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Like,
yeah, no, I actually really enjoyed it, but
I think the goatee suits him in this.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. It's, even when I was watching it, I was like, it doesn't really look like Denzel either, does he? Like,
it's not the Denzel we know now.
Yeah, it's very different, like how he looks and stuff. But he does a great job in the role. He's in insane shape as well for the role.
It's probably the best shape of his career, I'd say.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to be, because you're meant to be, like, the story is that he's middleweight a boxer. Yeah, middleweight boxer that's, you know, an absolute beast as well. So you kind of had to be in the...
I'd say he's a lot bigger than the weight that he was supposed to be, though. He was supposed to be billed at middleweight, so 170 to 180-ish.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, well...
He's easily over that, but even there's a very young Liv Schreiber in this as well.
Yeah.
I was watching it, and I was like, oh, look, it's you. And a John Hannah as well.
Yeah, it's quite a good cast overall as well.
Deborah Unger as well, Clancy Brown.
I don't think there was anyone in this film that I felt didn't do their role particularly good justice. I think they all played the part that they were meant to play very well as well.
Yeah, even the young fella that plays Lazarus, I can't think of his name now. I haven't seen him in much else, really.
Yeah,
he was very good.
Yeah, and it was a really good way of going about the story, because obviously the film starts where we see the black and white screen of the boxing of him absolutely battering your man. And I mean, some of those scenes you're looking at and you're like, that fight would already be stopped. That lad hasn't had his hands up for about six hits in a row now, and he's been knocked down three times. But
big,
you know, it's sensationalizing it a bit. But I think it's a great start to have him in the boxing ring, and it shows the date of whatever it was, and then it cuts to
him in prison.
Cuts to him in prison, and then it builds that's... like it brings you back on that story to get you back to that point of him in prison. I really like that as like a starting arc, because you know you start here, you get to here, and then they show you how you got from here to here. I think that's really good.
That starting scene's one of my favorite in the whole movie, where he's like, first person comes through that door is gonna die. Then the next one. Then the next one.
They ain't coming in here. They ain't coming in here.
They ain't touching me, Jimmy.
Yeah. But
Clancy Brown played the
warden.
The police officer. No, not the warden, the police officer. The sergeant or whatever.
Yeah.
He played him very, very well. He gets himself into a lot of movies, and he's nearly the same part. He's nearly the arsehole and everything, but he was very good in this.
Yeah, no, he was very good in this. But I thought that was really good the whole way they've done that. What I really liked is the scene when they're in the car and they get stopped by the police officer. And the police officer's like, oh, we were told we were looking for two black men in a white car.
Any two will do.
And he was like, any two will do. And it's not just what he says. Obviously, what he says is really good, but it's the method in which he says it. Like, he's really calm. He's not angry or anything. He's just like, well, any two will do. Will it? Like, it's like he knows, like, oh, this is just...
The cop knew who he was as well, because he refers to him as champ.
Yeah, he does. And he's like, the cop is like, it's not you, we'll let you go. But then obviously all the other police show up and it is pinned on him. But there's a real juxtaposition in how calm and collected he is sitting in the car. And then John Artis is sitting there, and you can see the character, like the guy playing John Artis, does a really good job of this. You can see how nervous and, you know, scared he is, because obviously he doesn't, like... Well, one, he hasn't a clue, but two, he's not a world, like, he's not a famous boxer either. So he doesn't have that confidence about him. He's a young kid in this film anyway. He's just a young kid who just happened to get lucky to be like, oh, I can drive this famous boxer home. And he was just buzzing about the whole thing. Yeah. And then he gets pulled over and he's been called in for a triple homicide.
Well, the funny thing is there, like, you look at it and they bring him into the hospital, and obviously the person who survived for a little while apparently IDs them and says no.
Yeah, which is what happened. Your man said no. Somebody, like, your man in the hospital says no, even though he's, you know, basically blind in one eye and he's, you know, bleeding out.
Yeah.
He says no. And then they ask the two boys and they say, no, it wasn't them. And everyone says no. Yeah. Everyone says no. And then it's just like, it's very obvious that, you know, it goes from being, no, it's not them, to, oh, it was definitely them.
The cop turns them, yeah.
Yeah, it turns all of them, because, you know, he has something on each one.
It wasn't even the two lads were caught for breaking into a warehouse about 500 yards up the road. That's why they were there.
Yeah, yeah. Which is true as well.
But then they also robbed the till, which actually happened.
For like $70.
Well, probably a lot of money back in 1967.
It's a lot of money, but like there's still a guy who's not dead on the floor. And
the
woman
girl's moving his hair.
Yeah, and he's just like, better go rob that 70 quid. Like,
Two coloured guys shot everyone up and left.
Yeah, call police. Call the police, and then he walks out. And your one just doesn't question that. But I thought that they did that scene very well. Like, they had Carter looking, they had the Hurricane looking very calm and collected, and John Artis just looks absolutely terrified the whole time.
Yeah.
I'd say
the method that he was going with there, John Artis, probably in real life, if he was like that, was probably thinking, I'm going to get arrested for robbing a car here.
Yeah, because obviously they don't know what they're being pulled over for originally, but you can even see it in later scenes when they're brought into the hospital and they're brought in anywhere, and they, you know, they're getting identified, like they get brought into the bar to see the stuff that's like to see the crime, they get brought into the hospital, and the whole time John Artis is just terrified, like you can see it in his face, like he just knows his life is over, whereas the Hurricane just obviously he still has this confidence about him.
Right up
the way he looks, where he's like, I'm not going to prison for this. I know I didn't do it.
Yeah, right up until he sees right yeah. up until it sees Della Pesca.
Della Pesca in the
hospital.
Even then, he's still quite confident in the fact that he's innocent, and he's, you know, he's basically threatening Della Pesca, you know, yeah, go for it, try me. And Della Pesca is like, yeah, that's the plan. And obviously there's a lot of fraudulent stuff going on here, and well,
the movie actually leaves out a little bit, so when he does get tried, it doesn't happen straight away. Like, they get arrested, and
they get let out.
Yeah, and then it's about 15 or 16 weeks later, it's 1967 then, because the World Boxing Commission took Carter's license away from him.
Yeah.
So he goes and fights down in South America. I think he was fighting in Peru or somewhere, and then flew back and then got arrested in the airport.
Yeah, so like they did do a lot to take out certain little bits here. Like they do make Carter look a lot better than he actually was as well.
Yeah, well, he was a boxer,
but as a person, like,
oh yeah, 100%.
They portray him as very innocent and stuff, and that is not the guy he was. Like
he was an aggressive.
Yeah.
I think, as far as I know, he actually batted his misses a couple of times as well.
Yeah, like he's not the nice guy that they portray him to be in the film, but obviously that's Hollywood, you know, sensationalizing the story to, and that happens in all of these, like even modern day shows, they want you to like the guy, or they want you to dislike this person. So
100%, yeah, you couldn't have him looking as bad as thing is being portrayed as a murderer, and then all of a sudden he's battering his missus and trying to prove his innocence, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think that leaving that out of the film makes it seem like the film makes it seem like, you know, he's definitely innocent.
It's a bit biased for him.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but that's always the way. Like, I remember everyone loved, Making a Murder or Catching a Murder, whatever it was, with your man who went to prison on Netflix.
I didn't watch it. I remember
I didn't watch it, but I remember everyone being like, he's definitely innocent. And even the creators came out and were like, yeah, we left out really vital bits of information that kind of do implicate him. Like,
yeah, that was your man Dylan something, was it?
I don't know what your man's name was, but yeah, they're very
honest. I remember hearing about it. Yeah. But obviously, like, you can't have him show him battering his missus, and then all of a sudden he shoots up three people in a bar, and they're claiming that he's not an aggressive person and thing.
Yeah. They do kind of show his aggression when he first meets her. Do you know, when they show...
Well, he goes for your man, yeah.
Yeah, when he just... and she keeps being like, come on, we'll go for a dance. And all he wants to do is really fight your man.
Yeah.
So they do show that there is that side of him. But there's a scene when, obviously, he gets brought into prison and they're like, get into the prison gear. And he's like, no. So they send him down to the hole. And you get to see
90 days.
You get to see his brain like break. But like the first few days he's in there, you see him putting like his watch on the bar and just spinning it around. Yeah, and like counting down. Yeah, counting down the light going off and stuff. And you know, if you've ever sat somewhere and you're just truly bored, like you will just do stupid things like that just to take your mind off it. So I thought that was a really good like little showing of how bored he is and how little there is for him to do down there.
That scene where his mind is bending, I think, is one of the best scenes in the movie.
It's very good.
Denzel's acting, he's talking to himself. It's a bit like Andy Serkis did for Gollum in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
He's monologuing with his dialoguing by himself.
Yeah, dialoguing between his own...
Two characters, yeah.
Well, it's three, because it's both himself and...
the good and the bad.
The like quiet one and the like the aggressive one as well.
Yeah.
So I think he does a really, really good job of getting all that done. But the aggressive one, you can see him where like the aggressive one's just like, yeah, I'm gonna fight. And he's like, no, I need to get that out of my system. I need to stop being that really aggressive guy when he's stuck in prison for this long haul. I do like the bit where they focus very much on the young Lazarus getting, you know, he picks his first book, and this is the first book he ever reads and stuff. And as he's reading through it, he asks the Canadians that he's living with, he's like, why did you
take me?
Why did you pick me? Like, why did you bring me here? and he'd never asked, like, he's obviously never asked this before because they, you know, they were all shocked by it. But it's obviously he's been reading the 16th round and he's realized how hard life was for somebody else. And he's like, why did I get so lucky? He's kind of questioning why, like, what did they, why did they pick me? Like, why did I get all this luck when somebody else had none of it?
He also considers himself somewhat the same in terms of had no chances. His parents were.
Yes, two parents are alcoholics. And it's not something they refer to in the film, but apparently you don't really see it in this, but with his parents being alcoholics, they were actually kind of middle class in terms of wealth.
Yeah, they were.
His parents drank away all of the money they had, and then they had to move to this rougher area.
He was in a decent middle school, apparently.
Yeah,
and whatever. Then money ran out. That's where they were saying his education is pretty good, and he couldn't. He was top of his class, but couldn't read up until the second grade, and that doesn't make any sense.
It's a bit sensationalized, but
yeah.
I think it's a great when they show him with the book. For anyone who, like, I don't know, you weren't really a big reader when you were a kid, but like I would have been huge.
Still not. But that was one of the first books that I actually went out and bought for myself.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, I was big into reading and stuff. So I think it's really, it's a really great scene in the way that they keep showing him with the book. And he's like, I was never carrying a book around, but like they show him like sitting in his bed reading the book and he like passes out while he's reading it. And like for people that did read when they were kids, that would have been very much a thing. Like when you get into a book, you're stuck into it and time does start to kind of escape you a bit. So I thought that was a really good, like, little reference to how much he's, you know,
enjoyed the fallen book.
Yeah, he's enjoying the book. He's basically fallen in love with it. And then there's a scene after he tells them how much he loves it and stuff where they show her reading the book while he's outside.
When they're putting the heavy bag up.
Yeah, sorry, that's what it is. He's outside punching the heavy bag and it shows her sitting in there reading the book, because she's obviously realized how much of an impact that's had on his life. So she's like, I better read up and
see
why he wants this punching bag, see why he's fallen in love with this this book so much.
Well, as I said to you in the group chat, I actually brought that book away with me to Turkey when I went after I bought it, and I finished it within a week of the holiday. For me to read a book with 300 pages in it in a week. I was reading it at the pool and I was reading it during the day.
But that's what I mean. When you get engrossed in a book, it is very easy to just, this is all I want to do is just to read through this and get to the, you don't even want to get, it's not so much that you want to get to the end. It's just that you want to get to the next part. Like, and what happened then? And then it's not like, and then when you get to the end, you're like, I wish I hadn't done that. Cause now.
Yeah. Well, now see, I'd kind of known because I'd done my 6-year history research project on Ruben Carter.
But it's still interesting, like, you know, even if you know the subject and, you know, kind of know how it turns out, it's still interesting to read through it.
Yeah.
And see it from the person who's, like, their perspective as well, you know?
Yeah, well, like, when he's in the first few chapters, he describes his time at Jamesburg, the kids' prison, and it sounds horrific.
Yeah.
He's literally talking about people getting raped and everything.
Yeah, like, yeah, he talks about how rough it was, but I think there's, like, they keep referring to him later in the film of, you know, you're convicted by a jury of your peers. And there's a great scene in this where he looks over at the jury and it's all white people. And you can see that he's kind of like,
they're all well off white people.
Yeah. And it's like, these aren't my peers and they're not. And, you know, that was the way it was, because obviously the prosecutor has a say in who the jury is going to be. And they kind of went for
all white,
you know, like this. And it plays into the racially motivation, like the racial motivation of, you know, any two black people would do at this point, like, was basically the way it was looking.
I know the BBC actually there, I think it was 2018 or 20, the end of 2018, started 2019 or something, brought out a 13-part series on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's called The Hurricane Tapes. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I keep trying to find it.
You'll be find interesting it somewhere. To see. Yeah.
But there's a couple of scenes in that movie like that are way over dramatized, like where the wheel comes off the car.
Yeah.
Now they said the car was tampered with, but the wheels, I don't think the wheels came off.
Yeah, it's probably the brakes, like wheel, like you're probably a bit too obvious to have the wheel come off. But yeah, like, and I think that is a good thing, like that Carter obviously does, like the Hurricane, he does point it out to them that he's like, I can't protect you out there, and the people that put me in here are not going to be happy that you're
digging
into
around.
This. Yeah, that you're digging into this. But they do. During the whole film, he kind of portrays himself as, you know, he's resigned to being in prison for the rest of his life. He doesn't care.
Yeah,
you know?
I can do the time.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, I don't care. Like, I'm just like, I don't care about anybody. Prison doesn't bother me. Nothing bothers me. And he's just real blasé about it.
The scene where he's like, I'll sleep when they're awake. I'll be awake when they're asleep. So they can't. So everything's different. It's basically turned it back that I'm here because I want to be then.
Yeah, but he goes on about this the whole time, and he breaks up with the wife and tells her, like, oh, I don't want to, like, you need to move on and things like that. But then obviously they all come in to see him, and they start talking to him about the case and how, you know, they'll help get him off. And you can see this is when he, like, dismisses them and tells them, I don't want to see yous again. Like, I don't want any contact with you. But you can see that as much as he's tried to pretend and act like he doesn't care about the case anymore and that he's just resigned to spending the rest of his life in prison, he does still care. And that's why he gets so pissed off about it. He's just like, people are actually making me care and making me feel like I can get free. Like,
that was the start of the scene just after he gets turned down by the New Jersey State Court when they rejected his appeal. And then they come in and he's like, no, it's not happening anymore. And he just fucks them out then.
Yeah, and he's just like, I don't want to feel. And then obviously they send, they've left him the gift of his robe, which he obviously loves. And then Lazarus sends him the high school diploma. Is it high school or whatever? I don't know. Whatever school. He sends him some diploma and he's like, I'd never would have got this without you.
That's the next time he hears from him after he
chucks them out, and he's just like, I don't want to hear from them again. Like,
yeah, and that's when he rings them and he's like, I can't do the time.
Yeah. Now they portray this as he's rang and said that, and she's taking it as this is a final call. He's going to kill himself here. Like, and I don't know if that was ever the case with him. I don't know if he was actually at that point.
No. Apparently not. He even said, I've heard a few of his interviews where he says he was never a thing. He just wanted to be left alone again to go back to his shell. His 8x10 cell or whatever it was his safety block, and that was it.
Yeah, but he's he gets really pissed off with them. And obviously he's like, whenever the subject of him becoming free and stuff comes up, he kind of used to shy away from it. But after he receives the diploma, he kind of starts believing, because they start presenting evidence and they're like, this happened. And obviously the person across the road, so like part of the case was always billed that the reason
someone
that he went
his car.
Yeah, well, no, the woman above seen his car, that lived above the bar seen his car, Paddy. But then the guy across the road with his wife had seen the people get into the car, and he'd said it definitely wasn't Reuben Carter. And then in the film, they're like, he passed away a couple of weeks late, like a couple of weeks before that,
before
the trial. And then there was the thing of like, oh, well, the reason he was so angry with that bar is because black people weren't allowed drinking it.
They had a tab, yeah.
And she was like, well, no, we had a tab. Like, that was never the case. So obviously all this evidence getting washed away and hidden and things like that gives him more hope. And eventually we get to the actual trial where he's like, I want to push forward with it.
Knowing that he should by right lose his evidence.
His lawyers are like, you know, if they throw this out, you will lose all your evidence. And I do think that was good, because if they had gone to court, like gone to trial in, like submitted this evidence
in Jersey, they would have taken it away. They would have just got rid of it.
No, well, in Jersey, it would have been heard by a judge. And then
it has to go back to that first judge who denied him appeal three times.
So what would have happened is that it would have gone back to that judge. He would have still ruled in the favor of guilty. And then they would have had to go to the next one. But by the time they've done that, they've now given this information to the to the judge and to the prosecutor. And the they're covering their ass at this point. So they're going to go and they're going to go and fix whatever problems have been found, you know. So he doesn't want to do that. So he says, no, just go straight up to the federal level.
The bit with the judge there, though, where the defendant's like, we're not ready.
Yeah.
And he was like, why not? Or we're not prepared. Why not?
Yeah. That is a great scene, but I don't think, I can't imagine that would ever happen in an actual court. We're not ready. Why? Well, we didn't think you'd listen to this.
Well, technically, the judge shouldn't have listened to it, really.
No.
Well, he can listen to it. Whether he wants to accept it is...
Yeah, which is what happens. He sees that, you know, there is quite a lot of questionable evidence that had been left out of the original cases. So he obviously takes it on. And eventually... the hurricane is he's released from prison, but he's never not guilty. It's never been admitted that he wasn't guilty. He got out
on habeas corpus.
Yeah, so he still never got, you know, his name cleared in the record books.
He got out just because of it was like a misjudgment or something.
They said that the basis for the whole trial was racially motivated and that shouldn't have been ever the case. So it was just, but he was never considered not guilty by a court of law. The one thing this film I think kind of does let itself down on is that it never shows John Artis being released.
It does. You see him, he's mopping the floor and then he walks out and then at the end it comes up and it says that he was released from prison.
Now, it does say that there, but like surely when they're bringing the case to the federal judge, him and John Artis are tried together. So why?
Yeah, but because it's Ruben's appeal. John Artis would have had to appeal himself because they were both they were tried together, but both of them got different sentences.
Yeah,
so all of them got sentenced to three life terms.
Mm.
John Artis got sentenced to three life terms to run in one go, where Ruben, kind of deemed to be the shooter, got them consecutively.
Yeah.
Consecutively.
Yeah, but my point is that they kind of brushed over John Artis quite a bit. Do you know?
Oh, yeah, they just leave him.
Like they mention, like Carter obviously eventually at some point mentions John Artis was just a young kid and like he could have just said, yeah, it was Ruben, he made me do it, and then he would have copped a plea bargain and got out, and he never did that. But that's basically all the mention we get of John Artis, which is, you know, it's a bit unfair on him, but I suppose the story is about the hurricane.
He's a nobody.
Yeah, he is. And obviously they use snippets of the big song by Bob Dylan throughout the film.
That's brilliant, though. It starts off and then it starts into the movie and then halfway through it comes in and then towards the end it comes in.
And it is a great song, and he hasn't played it since the release. Since Ruben got released, he's never played that.
He doesn't need to anymore. Like, obviously, you got the rumours where it was like, oh yeah, when Ruben Carter was on his deathbed, he admitted to killing him to beat the justice system.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen. Like
no, it didn't. And it's, you know, people have said that didn't happen. But no, he did stop playing the song after they eventually got released. And I think a lot of people hate that because it made its impact. But it's also, you know, it's his biggest song. Like,
It's his most controversial song.
Nah, that's his biggest song. Like, everyone knows that song. Even people who don't like Bob Dylan know that song. Like,
I don't fully agree with that one, to be honest. But it certainly is most controversial song.
I'd say that's his biggest song, like the most, and that's the one that like everyone wants him to play, and he never will.
Yeah, well, the song served its purpose, but like the likes of when you actually watch the movie, it has real clips of Muhammad Ali in it.
It does, yeah, and like there was a lot of famous people that did step in to try and help.
A lot of them marched on the prison more than once. Muhammad Ali, I think, after two or three of his fights, gave his fight purse to to Ruben Carter's wife and his daughter.
Yeah. They did get a lot of support, but I always thought it was a bit strange that I understand why Bob Dylan stopped playing the song, but like when something is one of your biggest hits like that you've ever had.
Yeah.
I think it like if you have fans and they've paid to come see it, like I would say
play the song.
Yeah, like there's no reason not to play it. Like, yeah, he got out, but that doesn't change the fact that, you know, it's still like up there as a fan favorite. But overall, like I thought this film was deadly. Like I hadn't seen it before. I really enjoyed it though.
It's a good pick, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I enjoyed both the story it tells, even though it kind of leaves certain bits out. But I liked the fact that it tells it from two different perspectives. It tells them from Lazarus, his perspective.
I actually want to get my hands on his book, Lazarus and the Hurricane, the other book that they picked some of the story from.
Mm.
I haven't read that one. Like, as I said, I'll give you a lend of the other one. But I wouldn't mind picking up Lazarus and the Hurricane.
But I think it's good that they tell the story from the Hurricane's point of view and from his point of view, like simultaneously.
Yeah.
Whereas he looks at the Hurricane as, you know, his idol and his hero.
He's the man, yeah.
But it's not because he grew up watching him boxing or that he, you know, loved him as a boxer. It's nothing to do with that. It's his life story that he emulates himself to, like.
And if it's any consolation, that book went down his jocks.
Yeah.
What if it's stuffed down your crotch?
Yeah, but I thought this was a really good film. I thought they did a really good job of telling the story, even with the fact that obviously they don't show everything the way it really happened.
I can't believe you'd never seen it.
No, I don't know how I'd never seen it, because it is something that I normally would have gone out of my way to watch. I don't know how I never seen it. But I'd never seen it before.
Yeah, this I remember seeing this when me and the lad used to hang out in Chapusters. I remember taking it one day as a free rental just to watch something. And,
yeah, see, I don't know. Like, I used to go to like the video shops and stuff. The one up near me.
Advanced Vision.
I don't know what it was called. I used to go up there, you know, quite a lot as well. And I don't know. I just never. This was just never one film that came onto my radar somehow.
I remember watching it the first time. And I was sitting there going, "Jesus, this is boring." And then when I watched it, when it finished, I was like, "Oh, I really enjoyed that."
Yeah.
But then again, I wasn't. I was only at that stage. I probably would have only been 13 or 14, you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, I think this is more of a film that you'll appreciate more as you kind of get older.
Yeah.
Because
especially for me, it picked off for me and became one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
And then obviously I did my research project on it in history in sixth year.
Yeah. I think it's a very good film because it's not a boxing film, but it's based around a boxer.
Yeah, it's not like Ali with Will Smith, where it is basically boxing this, boxing that, and some religion thrown in there.
Yeah, they do enough just to let you know that, you know,
he was decent.
He was a boxer and he was a champion as well. And then he got, I believe after all this, he was awarded the title. Yeah, which is the only time it's ever happened.
Yeah, they swore it probably wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, well, you would, like, he obviously only got gifted it because they were like...
Well, he may or may not have been robbed in terms of the film if you watch that, but yeah.
No, but
fight,
I think...
That fight didn't go that way.
Yeah, no, but I think they gifted it to him because they were like, had he been able to, like, had he stayed out of prison...
He would have won.
Been able to keep boxing, there was no doubt that he was going to be a champion at some point.
Yeah, well, when he moved from welterweight to middleweight, he was too powerful. It was like McGregor when he first came into flyweight.
Yeah.
He was just knocking people out for fun.
Yeah, and, you know, people say, like, for McGregor was fighting at too low a class. Like, that's...
He was too big.
He was too tall and he was too strong for that class. And he was cutting weight to get down to it and he'd look ill all the time.
Yeah. Like, that's where I was saying, like, even in this, Denzel looks a lot bigger than he should have been.
Yeah, but he should have looked a lot skinnier. But,
I know he's an actor, and there's a thing to it. Like, you're not going to put yourself in danger. You're not going to do what Christian Bale does. And
yeah, well, I think even at that point, you still want to look a certain way. Like, you want to portray him as the big guy that he was.
Well, I don't think it helps that I think he was only 5'8" or 5'9".
I think he's 5'9". Like, so he's not.
Denzel's probably a bit bigger than that.
Denzel's definitely 6 feet.
Yeah.
And like, if you're cutting down to that weight, I know 5'9" to 5'10" to 6 feet isn't.
Let's have a look.
It's not massive, but like that difference in weight class from those two is huge. Like, that's why you don't see the 6 footers down fighting in that weight class. You know, it's too much of a cut for them.
Yeah, Denzel is, he's 6 foot, nearly 6 foot one.
Yeah, so I mean,
he's nearly the same height as I am.
Yeah, so he's obviously going to have to be that bit bigger, but like.
Yeah. Well, then again, when you're not in fighting shape either, you're in team, but Denzel was in supreme shape for that movie.
Yeah, no, he was. But yeah, overall, absolutely thought this was one of the better films I've seen in a long time. And it was good to watch something that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, to me now, I think they were a bit hard done by. I would have probably given Denzel the Oscar for that.
What beat him out that year, though?
Kevin Spacey for American Beauty.
Yeah, you see, that's kind of the problem. Like, sometimes you're like, he should win an Oscar for that, but then you look at what beat him out, and you're kind of like, ah.
But see, the problem is, when you look back, right, so Kevin Spacey won that in 2000.
Yeah, but I think that film did a lot better as well, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, and that gets factored in, even if they say it doesn't, like, it does get factored in.
I'm just going to see who won the best actor in 1999 when that actually came out and could have been qualified.
I think this did qualify as one of the best actors.
Roberto Benigni for Life is Beautiful won best actor in 1999. I've never even heard of that movie.
No, but I think the fact that it didn't do well at the box office is probably what hurt the most in terms of this.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of it, like, best supporting actor. Well, no, I wouldn't have put any of them in best supporting actor.
No, probably not. Like, this film is realistically, it's all about his performance. Yeah, it's about his performance more than anything.
Like, to me, I know he won an Oscar for Training Day and American Gangster. I think he won one for as well.
He did win one for Gangsters.
It could have. This could well, in my opinion, be one of his best performances.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. It's up there as one of his best performances, but that's not like it. It's just sometimes it's just down to luck, like whether you're going to win that Oscar or not.
I think it didn't help as to the stigma around the movie.
Probably didn't help too much back then either.
Well, let's be fair, the Academy Awards people aren't exactly the fairest people in the world either.
No, they have their idea of what they want to win, and
just ask Leo.
No, but like Leo's kind of a different one, because Leo didn't win for so long, but then you looked at what beat him a lot of the time and you're like, yeah,
they were better. There was a couple that he had that he the movie might have been better. It doesn't mean the actor was better, you know what I mean?
Sometimes they were, though. Like, I think
some of them were. No, like, don't get me wrong.
Leo was unfortunate a lot of the time in just that he'd put on a stellar performance and then someone else would just be that bit better.
Yeah, but the one that the Wolf of Wall Street, when he was beaten by Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club, that was literally nip and tuck to who got it.
Like, so just,
I think one of them won, was it the Golden Globe, and one of them won the Oscar or whatever.
Yeah, and it is like, that was the way for him, but I'm sure Denzel doesn't mind too much for
he has two of them.
Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't mind too much that he didn't get one for this. I'd say he was more like at that time in his career, as you can see, he was doing the likes of Malcolm X, and then this, it's like he was kind of in that role of wanting to.
Yeah, I think he went from this, I think, was to Training Day. Training Day was a year or so later. And
yeah, I think this kind of pushed him into the upper echelons. Yeah, the upper echelons have been picked for bigger roles.
And then he got the Bone Collector as well with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, and that helped him along as well.
That movie, his performance in the Bone Collector as a paraplegic was unbelievable.
Yeah,
he is in fact one of the. I need to go as far as saying he's probably one of the best actors ever.
He's definitely up there, and I think he kind of gets overlooked quite a lot as well. Sometimes he's just kind of forgotten about.
Yeah, like even his later stuff, like Flight. Flight was brilliant.
Good. Yeah, Flight's very good.
But yeah, he's a tremendous actor.
Yeah, but that was a great film, and I really enjoyed watching it. So it was a great pick from you. We'll have to get you back on again and get you to pick another film, and hopefully it's one I won't have seen, and it's as good as this.
I have a couple in mind.
Good. Well, we'll definitely have you on again at some point. So thanks, everybody. Good luck.
Peace.
Well, it's time for that part of the show that you all love, the advertisements for our sponsors. I know. None of us really like listening to these, but the truth is that we wouldn't be able to bring you this content without them. So let's just get down to it. First off, Wrestling Mania, the top floor of Stevens Green Shopping Centre. Really good shop for all of your wrestling needs, whether that's DVDs, title belts, pop figurines, other collectibles, T-shirts. And if you like boxing and MMA, he has stuff there for you too. If he doesn't have something that you want, you can ask him. He'll order it in. No problems. Really nice guy, the owner of this shop. So get on down to Wrestling Mania on the top floor of Stevens Green Shopping Centre. Oh, what's that? A pandemic? Well, that doesn't mean he's closed. Catch him on Facebook. Just send him a message. He'll sort you out. No problems asked. And our other sponsor, Peter Hart Graphics. Now, this guy has done most of, if not all of, the graphics for the Dynamos Podcast Network. Really good stuff, guys. Seriously, this is top, top quality stuff. And he doesn't charge a bomb for it, which is the greatest part. If you need any sort of graphic designed, it's peterhartgraphics@gmail.com. That's Peter, P-E-T-E-R, Hart, H-A-R-T-E, graphics, graphics@gmail.com. This guy is the easiest person I've ever worked with when it comes to making a graphic. You give him your ideas, he'll come back with something similar to what you wanted, and then if it might be exactly what you want, and if it's not, he is so open to criticism and tweaks, and he'll be back to you as soon as you give him what you want updated on that. This is easy stuff to get done, but actually if you tried to do it yourself, you'd realize just how difficult it is to make it look smooth and clean. Not a problem with Peter Hart Graphics. Check out his stuff on his Facebook page, Peter Hart Graphics.